gosh, a lot has happened in the past week. Ukraine, Russia, my sister got married, and I sat around thinking about, when am I going to put out part two of my interview with Morgan May, especially after attending a beautiful Floridian, gorgeous wedding between two people who I greatly care about. Why not put up an episode that continues the dialogue that men and women today are so messed up, and most romances founded on false ideals. Interestingly enough, my sister and her husband, they never really fell into any of the traps that contemporary romance is prone to. In other words, they're happy. Do you want to be happy too? Do you want to get over your triggers? And what exactly is shadow alchemy as Morgan sees it? Ready to pop your morning peyote pill? Morgan May's interview concludes on an all-new Greg's skin is one shade light pinker, possibly from a burn. Open loops. Your conscious mind has gone comatose. Good, because I'm now talking to you, your unconscious mind is now tuned in to your favorite late night talk show for the shamelessly fringe. It's Open Loops with Greg Bornstein, conversations that bend. And you're anti-fuckboy.
I'm anti-fuckboy. I mean...
Right? Are you?
What would being anti-fuckboy entail? I can't be anti-fuckboy. I mean, I think, yeah. I'm not... I don't support... I basically train my girls how to identify fuckboys.
Okay.
So they're not fucking if they are actually in a relationship. But I actually don't really blame fuckboys. They're just capitalizing off the market right now. And it's like, you can't blame them, right? If they could do it, this is human nature. This is why I think it's so bad to like villainize men. Oh, he did this. You let him. Like, you know, you made your boundaries available to that treatment. You like entered into a situationship on your own volition. What do you think is going to happen? You know, it's
right.
like they're humans are selfish. And I think that every nature organizes itself more harmoniously when we honor that, when we all act in line with our selfish nature, because, you know, if I'm acting selfishly as a woman in accordance to my needs, and you're acting selfishly as a man in according to your needs, guess what? We're built to be compatible. So like me honoring my needs, you honoring your needs, that's going to be a harmonious relationship, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I will say for the record that I have been on Tinder and looked at, as someone in my 20s and even in my 30s, looking at Tinder and swiping through, the amount of women that have put, I am looking for something serious, is off the chart. You would think that everybody was looking for a monogamous, looking to move towards something. You know, I mean, it's almost, and yet if we're talking, well, you know, I don't even know where this idea of, oh, I'm just looking for sexual liberation. I'm just looking to sleep around and have fun and all this stuff. I don't even know if that's as much of a thing as the ideologists tell us it is, as much as the ideology tells us it is. I think secretly at night, when you're swiping through something, there seems to be this feeling among, at least, you know, I'm just looking at dating profiles here. In an ideal situation, you're not going to go out with a guy that just wants to sleep around. you're going to look for someone serious.
Yeah, but you don't know. That's the thing. Boys are like wolves in sheep's clothing, oftentimes.
Exactly. And
Yeah.
that's the
So like,
problem. Men will play the game. That or they'll play a deceptive game a lot of the
yeah, I
time.
mean, and worst case, it's super deceptive. But best case, they're just not ready. And, they're like going with the flow. Let's see where this goes. And like maybe knowing that they're not going to settle down, but it's like, yeah, it's an inauthentic air, and it's comes from them just not being ready or being ready. But even though it's like, God, you're 35 years old. Like, what are you doing?
Do you enjoy open loops? Let us know. Go to ratethispodcast.com/openloops and leave a review. The more we hear from you, the more mind-bending taboo content we can get out there. Again, ratethispodcast.com/openloops.
Men, I think we're all wired for love and for deep connection, but I think there's something that happens in a man's brain when they have when they're more established, when they have their nest. Maybe the cookies are coming a little less easily, that they're like, okay, now it's time to kind of settle down. But like, with in the case of fuckboys, it's like you're never going to change a man. Like, you actually a man's ready or he's not ready, and like you have to meet them at just the right time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think most so are looking for that, but so you'll see that more on your end. But on my end, I actually have to train my girls how to vet guys and vet whether or not they're serious based on their effort, based on what they're saying. I teach them to kind of hold off on dishing out their cookies for a certain period of time, just to kind of weed
Right.
out the guys who want that exclusively.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that now that's very interesting, Morgan. Oh, gosh, I had another question about this that I thought was okay. So tell me this then. If you are now I forget my follow-up question. It was a really good one too. I'm just sitting here going, "Oh my gosh, this is such a this feels so hot
Rabbit
button,
hole.
this stuff."
Yeah.
Yes,
Oh,
and
it is. Because it triggers a lot of what women are doing that's not working. And they are just like, oh, you mean I have to take accountability for my life, and I have to develop boundaries, and I have to actually, because I mean, women were our nature is to be very discerning, but like, we have no shortage of suitors. Like, that's not a problem. It's like getting
Right.
in, just like a woman, you know what I mean? Typically. But then it's like, okay, like ad admitting that, like, yeah, if you've been dating narcissistic dudes or dudes that have been using you for your body or guys that you've had predominantly physical attraction with and nothing else, like you have to take accountability for that and change. People don't like
Right.
that.
Right. Yeah, yes. No, that is a controversial thing. That's a lot of oh yeah, I just find myself in relationships with narcissists all the time, and
Yeah.
I'm just and you do wonder how often in general, and men too. I mean, everybody, it seems that it is very hard to do that work. Now, I or to know that you should do that work. Now, that said, I think one of the reasons, and I think this is why I'm doing this podcast, I think this is why you're out there publicly. I think beyond the issues of male-female dynamics, there is a concerted effort to make spiritual and inner work less valuable than everything else. Corporate, we just want to build things. We want to have a nice house. We want to have this projection of what a family is. Travel the world. Oh my gosh, I love traveling. That's another one you see on dating profiles. I love traveling. It's and I'm going, yeah, but do you but what about traveling inside yourself to discover the person that you don't even know you're capable of being yet? In general, I mean, how do we? I do think this is beyond men and women. I think this is nobody is willing. There's a lot of trauma. There's a lot of work that has to be done. How do we get people societally to start really examining? Well, actually, yeah, that's me like victimizing or blaming society. I get it starts with the self, right? It starts with the self. But yeah, Morgan, I guess I'm curious your thoughts on that in terms of the idea of even paying attention to this inner work across the spectrum of genders. What can we do to what can people do personally, I guess, to make this work more acceptable by the mainstream?
Well, I think you're so spot on with that. And it's something I've spent years on this path of like going inward and unfucking myself, basically just like slaying all the, I call it untying my knots. Right. And you know, even me, I haven't really honored that. I'm like, looking at other things in my life, like wanting them to be different and not really acknowledging I've just, you know, delved into this work and in a way better position, for example, than my parents were when they had us. Right.
Yes.
So it's serious work and it needs to be acknowledged and honored. It's like, you know, it's the most important work you'll ever do in your whole life because it facilitates you actually living a life that's authentic to you. Right. It's like, you know, I used to think I wanted my life to look a certain way and I was living in New York and doing all stuff and I wasn't freaking happy at all. I wasn't. And so like acknowledging that and acknowledging that the only way that you're going to really live authentically is by doing this work. When you live authentically, you know, you have peace in your body, you have peace and you have freedom. Like this whole inner work thing, it's like, why do we do it? It's to free ourselves, right? To free ourselves from the bonds that trauma has left, to free ourselves from these mechanisms that we've developed to survive, but that are really dysfunctional in our lives, right? So like, it's the most important work you'll ever do. I'm not sure about like making it more widely acceptable, but I know that when I speak about it in these terms and speak about it, the minute that someone understands that they click that like they are in control of their own lives and that everything in their lives is a product of their belief systems and like the thoughts that come from their belief systems and then the actions that they take based on those belief systems and then the boundaries, for example, that they create based on that, you know, and like the red flags that they choose to ignore or don't choose to ignore. Like once you realize that one thing, that you are in control, the only person that you can control is you, then you know, able to kind of delve in and do this work. And you're because you're able to step out of victimhood. When you're a victim, then you want everyone else to change, right? You want the government to change, the economy's bad, you know, this and that. It's like none of that matters. Like it has nothing to really do with you and your freedom. Like we attain freedom and sovereignty in our minds, right? And so I think it's a values thing too. I mean, some people are actually very complacent, you know, not being this, right? Because it feels better. There's kind of an attraction or like attractive component that comes with being taken care of by daddy government and, you know, and like everything's safe and you don't really have to exert like autonomy in your life or accountability. I think it's the most important work. And I think that more and more people are kind of waking up to it just because it's just like an extreme time right now, you know? And so an extreme time and pressure kind of sparks people questioning things like that.
Yeah. I totally agree about the pressure factor that's happening here. Before I get into, I'm curious about, you know, your work with Shadow and the specific individual work you're doing with women and whomever I assume is intrigued by your work, because shadow work goes to any gender, really. What do you, oh my gosh, every single time I'm about, okay. As someone that is spiritual yourself, as somebody that believes in the paradigms, I believe based on stuff I've seen you post out there, that you, in a way, entertain this notion that things happen for a reason. That the universe is guiding us in the direction that we have to be guided. Can you say that about your journey? I know you say that you regret being in your early 20s and not having this knowledge, but do you believe because you didn't, and now you're in this place, you are in the ultimate place that the universe wants, and this whole notion of regret is itself a victim statement that you don't even identify with?
Ooh, yeah, I completely, that's such a great point. Wow. Mic drop. Love it. Yeah. I, when I say regret, you know, I use these terms. It was like responding to a TikTok.
Right. Right.
Can't really live with regret because I know that I am in a really powerful position right now to speak on the things that I speak about. And I think that I was kind of, when I look at my succession of like, even the skills that I've came into the planet with, like big communication skills and, you know, this, my mind, right? Like it's all for something. It has a purpose. So I know that. And yeah, maybe in the beginning of my journey, when I first discovered this stuff, I was like, holy shit, like what have I been doing? But
yeah.
Now it's certainly like a source of power. And that fuels me when I am working with other women. And I do believe like, look, you know, this universe, as far as everything happening for a reason, like we live in an internal universe. So everything that's happening on the outside is actually just a reflection of stuff that's going on with yourself, right? Like you know, we can go as deep as we want with this, but like I came onto the planet with all of my mom's generational stuff, all my dad's generational stuff. And I'm like the firstborn daughter with all of this stuff. So my inner world had the reflection of all of this stuff that I came in with, that I picked up, you know, in my formative years, in my blood, right? And so I've been going through this process of unearthing and asking and doing audits of my life constantly. Like, okay, what, you know, if this is showing up in my life, what is that saying about what's still inside me? What do I need to work on? Right. In order to, cause I don't want that. I don't want this dysfunction. I want, you know, X, Y, or Z. So yeah, as far as like things happening for a reason, it's yes. I've heard people say the universe conspires for your favor. And that's true on some level, but it's also like, this is not an external thing, right? It's just, it's a, as above, so below, as within, so without. It's actually like opposite to how we perceive it. Yeah. Which is why I think the shadow, I mean, is so, so crucial, because actually like our light selves is like, when we think about the shadow, right? Like, dark matter and light matter. Dark matter makes up 95% of the universe. Light is like 5%, right? Our subconscious mind runs 95% of the show. Like 5% of it is conscious. Like the shadow is actually 95% of what's running this whole thing. But you know, you and me talking right now, we're using words and behaving in a manner that makes us comfortable with each other, makes the audience comfortable. But really, what's in our shadow? We're these wild creatures, right? Like we're very civilized right now, but like, you know, maybe if you had said something that had really pissed me off, my initial reaction would be, you know, some vicious thing, but I can't do that because, you know, I have social consequences, things in the light. And so doing this work on delving into our shadow fearlessly, because a lot of shit is in there with all of us. You know, we've been unconscious on this planet for like a long time with generations. And, yeah, delving into that and unearthing it and untying those knots and integrating it, right? And stripping away these layers of these inauthentic selves that we build to survive trauma or survive formative living environments, survive work environments, survive just the culture, right? Stripping those away is part of this inner work and part of this kind of logic that, you know, as within, so without, you know, everything happens for a reason and has purpose to it.
So you're not saying that you have to be, I mean, that was my fear. I'm sitting here going, uh-oh, is it too late for people? I mean, Morgan said she hit the peak, like women in their 30s, are they done? This is...
Oh, no.
You know, you can still...
Men love women to believe that, but I think that it's... I just think men, some disempowered men really enjoy just bringing women... The truth is, in the hierarchy of things, yeah, men have to like audition to be chosen by women. We are the sexual gatekeepers, they say, right?
Right.
And so a lot of what I hear in Red Pill is just oh my God, women peak at 25 and you know, just are just trash after. It's just like, that is not my experience personally on the dating market.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just not. And I think, look, I think that there's a different strategy that you kind of use. It's not, you know, I can't pull the innocent card anymore. Like that's very attractive to men. There's like, but I'm finding I'm having much more meaningful, you know, relationships, deeper connections. It's like, it's a different, strategy, but like we're women and we still have like massive power, and there's still a way to connect with people and to connect with like their hearts. I think with a lot of this stuff, and I was even very guilty of it when I first started out. It's like, you know, red pill, it's like strategy land. And you just stay in this logical center. And oh, if this is the logic, then that means women are trash. And that makes me feel good because I can't have them anyways. It's like, but right. We're all like, it's like avoidance. It's like love avoidance. It's like, if you stay in this strategy logic land, then you're avoiding really connecting with someone's heart. And, you know, that's a game changer. Once you,
I think you're so right.
Yeah.
No, I'm so with you that, you know, I think at the end of the day, that heart thing is, it seems fluffy. It seems, you know, I've even heard people criticize Brené Brown for talking about vulnerability and all this stuff. But I mean, how, at the end of the day, relationships cannot be founded on not being human. My gosh.
Yeah. Oh, it's, my God.
And so many people, it seems like it can really mess people up when it's just about trophy wives. And I mean, I wonder this, do we think that Dan Bilzerian and or Hugh Hefner were happy? Were they doing it? Were they doing it right?
No, like this is also, I have a client, she just was kind of dealing with a guy like that, a guy who could get a lot of women and posted girls on his thing. You know, he wasn't quite at that
in
level.
Leo DiCaprio, but, I wonder,
yeah,
too.
But it's like, and look, I don't know, but I do know that humans were wired for action. We're wired for real authentic love. We're expressions of love. And developing stability, you know, with one person and building a family, like that is for our nervous systems. Like it's like how we're kind of designed. Right. And so, and right. I say that, I know there's a lot of fringe stuff. I'm not hating on any of that. I'm not hating on Dan Bilzerian either, but I think when I look at, like, you know, an example of a man in his masculine, it's not Dan Bilzerian. Like that is an example of a man who's like deeply avoidant and maybe insecure and feels that he needs to surround himself with a lot of women in order to feel good, you know? And I've seen it. I've dated guys, you know, but not very long, but like briefly, who kind of are like that. And it comes from, you know, an abandonment wound or a mom thing. And look, it's all, we're all so human. I have my own stuff. Everyone has their stuff, but it's like, yeah, I think those things, I think the trophy wives thing or being very transactional. I think if you get too much into that, you lose the whole point. The whole point is to connect, you know, with someone's heart. Yeah.
I appreciate that, Morgan. I appreciate that you're not, you know, some mole sent by the red pill of men to just say, hey, everybody, this is how it has to be. Because, yeah, I feel that goes in the opposite direction. They can go in the opposite direction. They're like, well, here's how it works. Therefore, here's how you take advantage of it.
Yeah, it's like women are evil because they're hypergamous and she'll just, you know, swap you out and date up. And it's like, it's interesting because a lot, I validate a lot of red pill ideology because a lot of it is founded on nature and, you know, what happens with our bodies and with hormones. And yeah, women are totally hypergamous. I totally validate a lot of it, but even girl game, I fell down the girl game rabbit hole. If you identify or adopt these ideologies, like, that's not an authentic thing. That's an ideology. It's oftentimes not fully true either, right? Like feminism, like you said, has certain merits. Red pill has certain merits. If you dive too far into anything, you lose the whole point. And it's interesting because I do tout a lot of red pill stuff. I attracted that crowd at first. And I still kind of do, but I piss off those guys a lot too, because I'm actually telling women like, no, your value does not diminish after you're 30. And like, you just need a little game and you need to learn how to read men and like how to move in this space. They don't like that. Guys don't like that. Piss off the guys in red pill, piss off the feminists. Piss a lot of people off. But
no, when you say game, what do you, that was one of the original questions I had. When you say that, I mean, what do you, because I automatically, I mean, I guess I'm trying to go for a post-game paradigm, and I don't think you mean manipulate men.
No.
But, you know, I also know that, yeah, you hear women and men say, hey, I'm sick of all the games. I'm sick of playing games. So I think that's different, too. I mean, what do you, when you say you're helping women, quote unquote, game the system, what do you mean?
When I say girl game, I basically mean like illuminating women to the logic of the game, right? So it's like how men really think, what men really say when they're saying, when they, you know, ask you for a same day date or when they ask you to coffee. It's like probably low effort, right? That probably just means that they're not super invested. And so is that an energy that you really want to spend your time with?
Right.
Like, probably not. You know, if he is showing up and making the effort, like maybe that's a good sign, right? And you should continue that. Like, you know, what is it's not about manipulation so much as it is about like educating women as to the nature of themselves and the nature of men so that when they enter into this dynamic, it's more harmonious. They're protected, right? Their boundaries are in place. They're not, you know, going over to a guy's house on a second date and expecting that he's not probably going to make a move. You know what I mean? It's like, oh, because, and why is that? It's because when you do that, you're signaling to the guy that like, okay, I'm kind of open for this to happen, even though this is all right. Subconscious. It's just like, you know, how to conduct yourself in this modern dating landscape so that it benefits you and that you're actually getting what you want and you're not, you know, being bamboozled by these F-boys and wasting your time. Like women's time is so valuable. And I'll say it's more valuable than men's because our fertility window is much shorter and our, you know, sexual market value, however you want to say, it's like, you know, it serves our best interest to be way more discerning with our time so that we can get the best possible match.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that's what it's about. And there are certainly dating coaches who are like more manipulative and text, you know, and doing certain things, but.
In a way, I look at it as you're ungaming them in the sense that you are seeing, you're pointing out to your clients that there is a game that people are playing. And therefore, by being able to see what those maneuvers are, they can lean more into their actual authenticity and not fall for tricks that somebody else is putting out there.
Totally. And yes, and when you do meet a really good guy, right, like maybe learning how to conduct yourself so that you're not squandering it early on, right? Like not traveling on like the third, fourth week and staying in the same quarters, because that is going to trigger both of your intimacy stuff. Like maybe it's better to just, you know, take it slower. Like there's just, yeah, on both sides, one, like weeding out the guys that you don't want. But second, when you do find a good one, and a guy that you are interested in, how to conduct yourself in a way that makes a harmonious connection between a man and a woman. Yeah.
Right. Now look, okay. Shadow. This is a very interesting topic for me because I literally, even this week, I finished the book last week. Have you ever heard of Lorna Gabriel?
No.
Oh my gosh. I want to send you down this rabbit hole, but then I'm afraid you're going to stay down there. just cause, well, but here's the thing, Morgan. I mean, I feel that you, the way you conduct shadow work, and I even want to understand what you mean by dark feminine, is very similar to Lorna. Now, I have since learned within the span of, it's really 2 weeks that I went down this rabbit hole, that she has a lot of cult-like practices. There are a lot of women who have broken free of this tribe. It's called Lux Godhead. And basically, what I found very interesting about Lorna's work was that she's all about dark work. She says the light grid's dead. It is forcing people to stay in a, it's forcing people to stay in a shadow management mentality as opposed to a shadow, a true alchemizing of the shadow. And her whole thing is that in the methodology, I mean, I'm a little confused by it, but basically any statement that where anytime you feel triggered, you can identify four key archetypes. I believe it's prostitute, saboteur, victim, and child are the four shadow archetypes, she says. And you can look at those statements, see which of them is being triggered by that statement, and then just completely alchemize yourself so you become this powerhead capable of doing anything you want. Now, I do agree a lot with the principles. I do agree that I think she's challenging and disrupting a lot of things. But I also think in the practice that she has created a land where there is a leader and there are people below her. And you're not supposed to question it. And that's where, as soon
No.
as I start seeing that kind of cult, like,
Yeah.
oh crap, you can't question the leader. You're not ever supposed to be on the same level. Then I'm going, oh, what? Well, Morgan May over here is saying that she practices dark feminine stuff. She does shadow alchemy, and she still has a heart. She still has a heart. So that's the thing. This is a whole, I agree with, I love disruptors. I think this woman is saying some very interesting stuff. But, I mean, you can alchemize your shadow and still be a human, can't you?
Oh my God, that's the whole point of, I think, this whole existence. I mean, we're put on the planet as creators, as alchemizers, and that doesn't involve actually anyone else but you. So I find it interesting that this woman is like a cult leader, and a little uncomfortable that I'm talking about similar things that she is, although I definitely
No, I
I don't
feel
think I
like you're
have the same
doing it in
empathy.
the lighter way. I mean, but it's not all, yeah, and she's all dark. She's all about the dark. I mean, when you say dark feminine, what do you mean?
Yeah, so I mean, with anything, light versus dark, right? I am really comfortable in the realm of the dark. Like I've, spent a lot of my life there, and also like I've alchemized a lot of it, and I'm like comfortable exploring it. A lot of people are very fearful, right,
Yes.
of going in there and because of what they're going to find, right? And the radical honesty that you have to have with yourself in order to really look at your stuff and accept that, yeah, maybe you are toxic on some levels. Well, maybe this is like a really toxic behavior that you need to change, or maybe, that wasn't
Yes.
okay. And it's really the ego, right? The ego is so fucking threatened by the shadow because the ego must maintain a positive image of itself in order to survive. Like that's how we survive in this thing. We must have a positive self-image. So yeah, I mean, as far as dark feminine, it's all of the stuff that we're uncomfy with. It's like
Yeah.
sacred rage. As a woman in this reality, in this light-filled reality, it is not acceptable for us to exhibit anger or rage. We're deemed as crazy or have an attitude or dramatic or whatever it is, and we're shunned and we have negative consequences for doing that and speaking our minds and enforcing boundaries sometimes, right? So, or even sexuality, right? If we're overtly sexual, we're labeled a whore and, just put into these, like labeled and shunned in society. These are sacred things that live in the shadow, in the darkness of this divine feminine energy of women as a collective. And, it's my belief that until you really get in touch with that, much like our shadow, until we get in touch with our shadow, we are not living authentically. We are exhibiting symptoms of coping with deeper stuff, but it's not an authentic life because you're not integrated. It's two very separate things. There is no alchemy, right? There is no integration. So what, the same thing with the dark feminine. It's like I take women on these journeys of looking at, the real reason behind the stuff that they're doing, the patterns that they're doing, their self-esteem, right? Why they don't have any boundaries, why they're allowing, men to treat them like this, or they're staying at jobs or in cities that are no longer serving them. It's like getting to the root of this stuff. That's the alchemy space, and that's where you change your life because that's the truth, right? This whole light-filled thing, I mean, I don't know if it's dead necessarily like that woman, but like it's not the truth. It's 5% of the truth. It's like a symptom of the deeper stuff. So I'm just, yeah, my whole journey has all been about like getting to the root of my trauma, not just my negative mental health symptoms, because I tried just treating those with meds for 10 years and guess what? It didn't work. I just got more and more miserable because this stuff was
Right.
festering under the surface. And so like in my experience, going there and unearthing it and healing it, really actually healing to the root, getting at it, looking at it as hard and ugly, as it is and raw as it makes you, like when you do that and when you alchemize it, and when you get in touch with this dark feminine and this stuff that's ugly or you're called crazy for, or like that will change your entire life. And that's where you source your power on, because now no one can say shit to you. Now like you have this thing fueling you that you are aware of, and you're centered, and you know yourself. You really know yourself, and you can move throughout the world as a sovereign being, no longer controlled by these triggers, right? I think what you mentioned before, you know, our triggers point us to where we're not free. If you're walking around and you're triggered by a white man talking, challenging feminism, like, yeah, maybe you have some things to look at, right? If you're on my TikTok and you're triggered because I'm telling you that you're in control of your whole life, and if you're not happy where it's at, it's probably your fault. You should look at that, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I think you're right. I think you're right. Any of the topics in this episode, anything on the TikTok, this is beyond male and female dynamics.
Yes.
This is the human condition. People get so triggered. I hate this normalizing of triggers. Mm-hmm. That's what's going on right now,
isn't
right?
That
people
fucking word trigger. It's like, yeah. Are you triggered or are you fucking angry? Like, yes. Oh, I got triggered when he called me this or this. It's like, okay, that sounds like you're fucking angry. And like, let's sit with that and like explore that. Or what made you angry? Or what, you know what I mean? It's like, even how we're talking about them, it's like dampening down. Anger and rage, right? This is a life force energy. Much like sexual energy is life force energy, right? It's creative energy. Anger and rage is life force energy. If we were all love and light, we're doormats and people could take advantage of us. And so if we dampen out, you know, rage and anger with words like trigger, with, you know, demonizing women for expressing it, right? It's like much easier to be controlled, docile, you know, it's like less powerful, less...
And what does that look like in the world? I mean, does Morgan, do you go out there? I mean, you're not screaming at people, are you?
No. But I am, you know, so I think something that happens with women, and particularly with rage, because I mean, there could be just a spectrum of things that happen. For me, it was like my formative environment growing up. I wasn't allowed to be angry. So I had to just shove it down. And, you know, then taking that throughout my life, this happens at many different scales with women for different reasons. It could be their parents. It could be, you know, society at large. What ends up happening is we end up developing anxiety and depression or thyroid issues because we're not speaking truth, right? This is like so pervasive with women. So what do we do? It's a great question. Developing a relationship, first of all, being honest about what you're feeling. If you're angry, you're not anxious, you're angry, right? Anxiety is a symptom of you pushing your anger down.
Yes.
So being honest about really what you're feeling. If you're feeling anxious or, you know, this discomfort in your body, sitting with it and allowing yourself to feel it, like sitting with it and allowing yourself to feel it, allowing this feeling to come up in your body, and this in private, right? Like, you know, like, because first you need to develop a relationship with it. And then once you master it in relationship, you know, you have more mastery over it. So you're not lashing out at people. You're not, you know, screaming in the streets, as you were saying, but like, we must develop this relationship with it, this honesty, this container for it, right? If we're really fucking angry about something, we must expand to hold it, not push it down. This is like, it's like life force energy rising in our bodies, and we need to hold it and get familiar with it. And for me, it's like embodiment practices. So I'll do that in the mornings, and I'll just allow myself to have this uncomfortable stuff course through my body so that when it happens in relationship, I'm a lot more, you know, I can just acknowledge I'm angry. I'm like really angry and kind of conduct myself either, okay, I'll talk to you tomorrow or, you know, however that looks. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, no, I think you're right in the sense that it is shunned. I mean, if you see, there's a reason that women screaming madly on, and men too, anger in general, you put it out there as it becomes a viral video. People sit around and look at it as an oddity for someone to express themselves with that much energy in that way. I mean, I also know that it doesn't feel like it's the most positive energy to put out there in a way, but I do wonder if there will ever be a world where people being openly angry is not something that we laugh at, and it actually just becomes, well, probably what it was for the cavemen too, just raw human stuff.
Yeah. I mean, you said something interesting. You were like, it's not the most positive thing, but I think even us labeling it like negative, it's negative because it doesn't make us feel all warm and fuzzy,
right?
But this is human. It's human. And it's our boundaries, and our boundaries are so fucking important. And, you know, our gut, these gut instincts and these feelings in general are important to feel. We're living in a culture that numbs us on so many different occasions, right? And so just like accepting that we as humans are like holistic creatures and it's not going to feel pretty all the time. And that's okay, because that's honesty. Like, if you know, yeah, I think maybe on this train of thought that you have us down, it's like switching the paradigm to just radical honesty and radical authenticity will kind of abate that, you know, because if I would rather in my friendships, I cannot do passive aggression. I can't do leaving things unsaid. Like, I need to be on the same page. Hey, do I need you to tell me a problem? I'll tell you when I have a problem. My nervous system just can't handle it. So that's how I conduct my relationships. And, you know, if anyone takes issue with me and they tell me about it, I'm so grateful, because then I can be present with them and be authentic and still in relationship with them, you know? And so just shifting our collective consciousness, maybe more on that track could foster more authentic feeling within our own individual person, right? Instead of just pushing things down, and more authentic relationship with one another.
Yeah. Now look, as someone that has gone through different phases, are you open to the idea that maybe you'll switch back? What would happen? Could there be a new feminism that one day you're going, oh, wait a minute, this was all wrong too?
It's a good question. And I think absolutely. I mean, I've done a lot of change in my life, a lot of 180s from one extreme to the other. It's like a running joke with the people that are close to me. I think, you know, this is why for me, it's important to understand like the logic of things and really parse apart logic. Like, as far as feminism, look, like my whole message is actually like, I believe it's true women's empowerment. And that has been tethered so closely to feminism for so long. So maybe there is a version of feminism that is true, I feel is truly empowering to women. And, you know, right. I do a rebrand or something and I'm all of a sudden comfortable with associating myself with that terminology. It's not that I'm anti-woman. I think a lot of people associate, you know, oh, you must hate women if you're not a feminist. Like, no, I love women. And that's why I can't identify as a feminist. So yeah, I mean, I'm open to anything. It's a crazy world. I'm like living in Mexico now, like, you know, talking about anti-feminism on the internet. If you had told me this would be my future 5 years ago, I would have felt
crazy. Are you in Mexico? Have they shunned you in the US? Is that why you're over there?
Yeah, they exiled me. So now I'm here.
Do you think actually over in Mexico, people are more, are things more balanced, or are they getting this kind of United States distortion of truths too? What do you think?
Yeah, it's interesting. So the place that I'm at in Mexico, I'm between Playa del Carmen and Tulum, and the expats who live here, it's just, there's been this mass exodus of people like piecing out from the US government or from the UK government or from the Canadian government, because they're just not about it. So it's actually attracted a lot of really like-minded individuals. And, you know, the vibe here is totally different. I can speak openly about, I always did, you know, but I would get a lot of backlash and make things a little uncomfortable. But yeah, you can speak openly about, you know, your beliefs about various things, about things that you're challenging. And it's just, it's a community of people who are like here for a reason, right? And so you have more in common than.
Wow.
Yeah.
This sounds like a great place to go. I might have to.
I recommend it to anyone listening. And there's people still, you know, participating and in the what's going on mentally, but there's also a lot of people who are just with how they're living their lives, like kind of protesting it.
Right. Let me ask you this.
A lot of plant medicine here. I know you talk about psychedelic a little bit.
That sounds awesome. Yeah. Is it cheaper there than it is to go to Peru and do these high level things or?
It's about $100 a ceremony. I don't know how much.
Wow. That's pretty good. Yeah. No, I know these, they're like thousands of dollars to do these. Oh. Peyote and like high level, and I get the authenticity, but it just seems like it's so expensive to do a trip like that. I've never personally actually experienced psychedelics, but I am curious, and I know it would be a game changer. I know it would.
Oh my god! I mean, it's like the most intense shadow work. Like, I've been doing a lot of it, but ayahuasca just like blew through so much on like such a deep level.
Yeah
and there are shamans. My shaman comes from Peru, so
you can awesome.
Get good quality. yeah Anyone's curious listening, recommend it. I mean, I don't recommend it. If you're called to it, I recommend it, but
there's so many things I want to ask you. I mean, look, before we kind of tie all this together, there's so much. You have this idea of money and manifestation, right? Don't you have an idea about how dark? I'm curious about your thoughts on manifestation and bringing money into your life. Because, and I do think this is something also that Lorna Gabriel talks about, and it is just kind of interesting in general. You don't hear it a lot in The Secret. Is the how darkness relates to manifestation and might actually be more of a gateway than just focusing on the light and picturing this house and the car and all this stuff. I mean, I'm curious how your exploration of these dark realms has related to your ability to manifest the life that you are manifesting currently.
It's a good question. I think that I think the closer you get to darkness, the closer you get to truth. And I think that that's a really powerful energy and frequency. And when you start doing that and getting rid of your shit, your blocks, and just this stuff, it's like that stuff doesn't exist because you're so connected to like the truth, really who you are. And it also develops a different relationship that you have with your own self-value, right? Because then you start to really understand what that is. So then I think when, you know, again, as within, so without, if you are in these darker realms, right, and comfortable in them, it's like a much easier process to then bring it into the light. It's like, whenever I hear people just focus on affirmations and just vision boards, and yes, these things work, but like, if you haven't gone into your stuff, it's like you're going to speak against a brick wall, right? Because it's like your external world is never going to be a manifestation of these things, because your internal world looks very different than these affirmations that you're saying. So that's what I have to say about that. And I think it's less popular than, you know, a lot of things that people talk about, but because it's more scary, you know, people get uncomfy. There's a process to do it that's not so scary. I mean, I know we're talking about dark and shadow, but like, you know, there's a way that you do it where you're still held and safe, and, you know, just like keeping tabs on how you feel too after every, you know, excursion down there. It's like that's what propels you forward, because every time you go in there and you slay one of your dragons, right, like you come out the other end more powerful, bringing more goodness into your life, more money. So that's my process.
Very cool. Well, we're gonna link to your famous TikTok as well as your website, but also one of the ways that I believe that you can be held well while going into the dark is to work with someone that is actively doing it, and I know that you have a one of the programs you're developing is the 6-week program. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
So I've created a program called Unfuck Your Heart. Yes, and it's basically for calling in love into your life. You know, a lot of the stuff that I had found, it's much like you said, it's like a lot of light stuff, a lot of heart opening exercises and affirmations, and that stuff is great. But if you are addicted to chaos, for example, if you love fuckboys, if, you know, this stuff is not going to help you so much. So I really developed this program for women to, you know, go through the process that I kind of went through to really open my heart and get connected to what that is. On a really deep level. And it involves a lot of shadow work. There's the chaos purge. There's, you know, a lot of juicy stuff. I encourage if anyone's having trouble dating and, you know, is finding themselves not really meeting the people that they're actually connecting with or that they want to be connecting with, or maybe it's more of an ego connection than a heart connection. This course is like perfect for you.
Yeah, that sounds pretty good. Does chaos have a role in any of this stuff? That's one of the things that Lorna Gabriel talks about. I mean, can you be a chaotic person? Can you be drawn towards the chaos and still have a life that is romantically fulfilling, career fulfilling? I mean, how would you frame that for people that don't really understand the connection?
Yeah, I think it's a really good question. I am someone who is I have a lot of chaos in me that I have to manage on a daily basis.
See, I relate to this. That's why I'm asking. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. But chaos is power, right? When we think about the womb is chaos. It's like infinite propensity. It's infinite potentiality, right? Chaos. It's like you have all the energy. You just need to streamline it. You need to like figure out what you want. You use this energy of chaos and you know, bring it forth into your life or however you want. It gets detrimental when we're doing that. And, you know, we have this power, but we're actually manifesting it in dysfunctional ways into our lives, like choosing partners that will perpetuate these cycles of chaos. Or, oh my God, I had this awakening to this concept when I gave myself food poisoning the night before an international flight. It was like, I consciously chose it because on some level I like chaos. I like, you know, putting myself in these situations. I mean, consciously I was like, oh no, this fish will be fine, even though it's a day old. Like, but really subconsciously I was choosing to eat this fish, right? And I was just so fucking miserable this next day walking in Miami airport, like having to stop at every gate just to sit down because I was like so sick. And I was like, Morgan May, enough. This is not serving you in your life anymore, you know? So like, you know, I did a chaos part. I did this whole ritual where I let chaos go. I thanked it because chaos too, if you have a lot of chaos internally, chances are you were raised in chaos or you needed it to distract yourself from deeper pain, right? Like I, you know, focusing on chaos or focusing on these processes that we undergo when we feed chaos is a good distraction, you know, to like actually getting what we want in life. So, you know,
wow.
Yeah.
Well, so, blew my mind a little bit. That's huge. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So like it's a process of, you have to thank it and honor it. Right. Cause it served you. It served me so much. I needed it to feel better at various stages of my life. Like it was really there for me when I was suffering, but also releasing it and choosing to create space to let in more peace into your life. Is kind of what I did. And it's interesting. You do that. And then you start noticing, oh my God, my room has so much clutter in it. Oh my God. Like my phone is so not organized. Like, you know, consciously you start creating more order and starting to bring, more of an organizational, peaceful element to all this energy that you're harnessing on a daily basis.
Wow. Very powerful
stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. No, this is super powerful. I mean, Morgan May, holy moly, we've gone all around here. It's been amazing. tell me your thoughts on 5G. Just kidding. Don't do that. that is just gonna be, we're just gonna throw everything out there. No, this has been great. Hey, look, everybody check out Morgan May. She is a shadow feminine, working to remove the chaos or channel the chaos into greater things, through alchemy and transformational coaching and just being an advocate for, I mean, look, men and women, women and men, women and women, theys, thems, everybody. You know, what kind of love do you want to see in the world? Should there be, do we need to redo romantic comedies? Do we need to like, what do you think?
The love that I want to see in the world is everyone or individuals. It starts on an individual level, waking up to the fact that we are programmed to live in our heads constantly and to think about things and analyze things. And, you know, especially in the Western world, like being right here in Mexico, it's so diametrically opposed to like how my life was in New York. So recognizing that we're all up here and this is not where the truth is. It's in our bodies and it's in our hearts. When you think about it, this is the only real thing that we have. Our thoughts can lie to us. Okay. The amount of times I was anxious and I had all these wretched thoughts and really it was just my anxiety, like, you know, creating more worry and thought spirals, like our thoughts lie to us. Our feelings even can lie to us. You know, it's like the only truth that we have is our bodies. Like this is truth. So staying in our bodies and out of our minds and really connected to our bodies with embodiment practice, that inherently brings us more into our hearts because we can start feeling that intuition, and having real empathy and love for one another because we're connecting with people on this space versus, you know, our headspace.
Yeah. Beautiful message. You know what I realized? There was one more question I meant to ask you.
Yeah.
And it was about I remember there was an article that came out about women who are, it seems, taking a heady approach to figuring out how to game the dating system. I forget what the movement is called. I know there's a whole Reddit thread about strategic dating for women. These women that are setting up, you know, they set up multiple dates a week and then they streamline. And then if one person says this one thing, boom, the man's out of the system. And that kind of thing, figuring out how to stack the odds in their favor in a very linear way. I mean, what are your thoughts on that approach?
I'm actually an advocate for that approach, but I just think that you need both. So I mean, I teach my girls, I always recommend dating on a roster, and I always recommend having really strong boundaries. And because, you know, you'll learn enough about a person on a first date, let alone first, second, third date. And if there's some game playing or bullshit behavior or whatever, like, yeah, you have options. So you don't need to put up with that. So I do teach, I think you're referring to feminine dating strategy. And a lot of my commenters ask if I like read that, and I've gone on it. But yeah. I've actually validated it's kind of like red pill for women a little bit.
Right.
But no, I advocate for,
I think The Guardian wrote a piece about it.
The Guardian. That's funny. I'll have to look that article up.
Even though The Sun wrote a piece on you. So that's, yeah.
But when you think about it too, like, we're talking about natural order and also like society, the patriarchy that people say, it's like, it's mirroring natural order. It's mirroring what our bodies do. That's how we've constructed society to organize our biology, right? Like, feminine dating strategy, like think about how many sperm come after one egg. It's like millions. So like women having options. And also I recommend this for men too. I don't think that anyone should just be dating one person at a time, especially when they're just starting, like, you know, keeping your options open so that you can find the best possible match for you. Like if you're a woman and you want to get engaged, how much sense does it make to date one guy at a time? Granted, I'm not saying like just sleep with all of them and you know what I mean? Like not saying that, but yeah, having suitors. This is how women used to date back in the day. Women actually back in the day in like the 30s to probably 50s, it was known that you should never date as a woman, a man more than two nights in a row, because that means that we're going to get emotionally connected to them. And then that emotional connection is probably going to bypass some of our other vetting objectives or our vetting criteria. So like if we're attracted to him or attached to him and then he pulls some bullshit, we're going to let him because we like him, right? But what if he's not a great guy? So rotational dating and having, you know, many guys kind of stacked helps you stay objective. It helps with your emotional mastery. And right. I think it helps like get you the closest possible to finding someone that's actually really well suited for you.
Well, this is something I also, oh man, now before we end the interview, a whole nother rabbit hole, but this is a question I have, which is about, because I've definitely, and again, I guess I wonder when some people say, I'm wondering for myself and I'm wondering for women I've dated where the statement comes up, I didn't feel a connection, and then the dating stops. Sometimes I'm going, since we are so disconnected to ourselves in this society, when people say that, you know, is it worth putting us through a regimen where the first date could be just okay, but you still like the person enough to be willing to go on a second date? Or in a world of so many options, and I think this is the thing that a lot of people were fighting against with Tinder and online dating. It seems, oh, this person, I remember one girl said, I was on a date with this girl, she said, yeah, this guy was great, but he had an Ed Hardy tattoo, therefore I will never go on a second date with him. I mean, I'm going,
that would be a deal breaker for me too.
Wow. Okay. So that's fair. Good
Ed
to know.
Hardy tattoo. I mean, maybe if he's out of his like Vegas fuckboy phase, maybe, but that's like, that's pretty.
That's fair.
Extreme Ed Hardy tattoo. You know,
that is fair.
That's a one thing. But I see your point and I actually validate it. And this is my solve for that. So a lot of times, you know, women are, we were looking for the fireworks or the connection. And oftentimes this connection is a lie. It's a repeating pattern of, you know, relationships with our dads, for example, or other stuff. And it's like, you can't believe it all the time. So this is why I always teach women, understand what your core values are, really what you need in a partner and really what you don't need. And this is not like, you know, it has to be 6'3" and he has to, you know, make $3 million a year or whatever it is. It's like, actually, like, what are your values? Like for me, my biggest value probably is freedom. Like I've constructed my whole life to be as free as possible. It's why I do the shot. It's why I do everything. Why I have my own businesses, like freedom. And so I know that I can't date guys who have a boss. I can't date guys who have a 9 to 5 because, you know, it's a differing in just mentality. I actually get along much better with entrepreneurs. So that already, you know, shrinks my dating pool. Once you have these kind of criteria of what you want your life to look like, what your values are, then you're actually not, you know, moving in accordance with your feelings. You're moving in accordance. It's a little bit more objective. Granted, you're vetting them to make sure that they're healthy and like mentally and whatever, yeah. Not like these narcissists, but not, I think that conversation too is like a big one. The narcissist, everyone's a narcissist now. Men are narcissists. Like I don't validate that, but it is a thing, you know, definitely a thing to look out for, but yeah, understanding really that stuff. And then maybe when you meet the guy and you don't initially have, you know, this whole big thing, you're giving him more of a shot and you're allowing that connection to grow. And you're also fighting against maybe some of your programming. Maybe this guy isn't a fuckboy. Maybe you really like fuckboys and, you know that this guy's actually probably good for you and there's enough of an attraction and whatever for you to let that grow. I think can be a good anecdote.
So it all comes down to working on yourself again. I mean, really getting in tune with what matters to you, clearing the way for actual connection to come through versus some societally programmed idea.
Well, yeah. And constructing your life in accordance with that. That's the most important thing. So if my key core value is freedom, I can't like live in New York City right now. That place is like draconian as hell, you know? So it's like,
that's why I'm interviewing you. This is the closest I can get right now to getting out of here. Yes.
I love New York. It's bad. But like, you know, with my ass to Mexico, and I've been meeting amazing people here with like, yes, who also think the same way. So when you start, you know, making your life the best possible thing that it can be, when you start making your person the best possible person that it could be, working on these things, like, you know, as a woman, that's a different data set than men, but it's like things that we should be focused on. That's what's going to attract like the best possible partner. If you're not the best version of yourself in action, not just the work, if the work is totally most of it, but then how does that translate into what your life is looking like? You know, doing that work will bring you way closer to starting to like interact with the kinds of people that you might get along with.
I love it. Ladies and gentlemen, and everyone else, Morgan May, who's she going to piss off next? Well, I'm excited to find out. Yes, Morgan, thank you so much for coming on. This has been very enlightening. I again, scared for the feedback, but also, again, I know you're open to the challenges. You are an open-minded enough person that you will listen to. You're not saying you're fully correct. You're open to learning too. And I very much appreciate that about you.
Absolutely. Greg, thank you so much. You're such an exemplary interviewer. This was such a pleasure.
Oh, you're such a great guest. Thank you. This has been great. Morgan May, thank you for the epic two-parter. Gave me a lot of great content. I want to know your thoughts. Write me at TheGregBornstein on Instagram. And I have to tell you, after spending a week in the heart of American denialism, i.e. the state of Florida, I don't think anybody gets triggered. I mean, maybe it's just Miami. Okay, there's no emotional firing of triggers in Miami. Let's go with that. I want to thank Ronnie McGilvery for the theme music. Morgan May, thank you again for coming on, and thank you for listening. We'll talk soon.